show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida here this day before Thanksgiving. Ah, yes. Are you all ready for Thanksgiving? I don't know if I am or not. Going to do the same old thing. I don't mean it in that fashion. I don't mean to cavalier about it. Going to go visit some friends tomorrow and have a good Thanksgiving dinner. And with all the trimmings, a terrific cook and good friends. Hey, what more could you ask for, right? By the way, let's get this out of the way. You can call us here at 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Coming up a little bit later, toward the bottom of the hour, almost at the bottom of the hour, I think at 3:25, we've got John Nichols from The Nation magazine scheduled. John is going to talk to us about the Scotty McClellan story, which turns out might be a story, might not be. How do we know nowadays? How do we know? It could be, now he's saying, and backtracking, his publisher's backtracking on it a little bit, saying he didn't mean to imply that the president was feeding any false information. So we'll see, and we'll talk to John about that, and we'll talk about that quite a little bit today, I am sure. It was the hot topic of conversation. Of course, we mentioned it on this program yesterday. We had the advantage of hearing it and going right to the show with it yesterday, so we had a little bit of a jump on everybody with it. That's always fun when that happens. It just depends on timing, when you can sit and watch the Matthews show or the Keith show or any of those in the evening and know that you've already covered those stories. And once in a while, you have to wonder if they haven't been listening to our program. And I don't mean that in a bragging sort of way, but you just see little incidents now and then. You think, somebody from that program listened to what we had to say today or something. You never know. Anyway, John Nichols coming up from The Nation's magazine, always a great guest. John's been with us several times here in the program, and we'll talk about the Scotty McClellan story. Thanksgiving. What do you have to be thankful for this year? Even though a lot of you might be having difficulty paying your bills right now, or you might face the possibility of losing your job or your home, do you still feel lucky to be an American? Or are you down and out and to the point where it just doesn't matter anymore, like I heard in an email I received today? And by the way, I'll get to this in a minute. I spent a good bit of last evening answering email. I got an avalanche of email regarding a little tete-a-tete we had on the program yesterday regarding the Democratic candidates, and we'll talk about that a little later. But first, I want to read an email that I got this morning. And actually, it's the only one I got regarding this sort of thing for Thanksgiving. And this email touched my heart, and I answered it. And the gentleman that wrote it has acknowledged my answer. His name is Kurt. Dear Guy, I know it's Thanksgiving and all, But somehow I just can't get in the spirit this year. While I'm very thankful to have a wonderful wife and a beautiful daughter, I don't think I have anything else to be thankful for any longer. We've had health problems in the family this past year, and as a result of that, we have a mountain of medical bills we will never, ever be able to pay. $273,000 in medical bills resulting from a seizure my daughter had, and the weeks of hospital treatment and physician bills piled up. I'm grateful to them for saving her life, but how are we to go on with our family life now? We are going to lose our home in less than 60 days. Because my wife lost her job during our medical crisis as a result of her having to be at the hospital so much and having to stay home to care for our daughter after she was released from the hospital. My hours have been cut to 30 hours per week and the medical benefits are non-existent. Guy, I feel we've been abandoned. I feel we've been ruined by something we had no control of, but we can't get any help at all. All this talk I've heard over the years about massive welfare payments and so forth, and when the time comes for us to need help, we can't find anyone who can help us. I admit I'm bitter. I feel we're the victims of a system that just doesn't work anymore. Americans don't want to accept the fact that our health care system isn't for the average family anymore. It's only for those who have the best health insurance and those who can pay the most. The rest of us can lose everything we have, and those who worship President Bush's way of doing things think that's just fine. I find it a shame that our family has donated all we could over the years to the United Way and to other charitable organizations and to those in need, but when tragedy comes knocking on our door, we're literally abandoned. Sorry for blowing off steam. But I had to tell someone, and I know you understand. God bless you and yours, Kurt. Well, unfortunately, there are many people in that position today. It doesn't do any good to tell Kurt that he's not alone, because there are many, many people in this country that are suffering because of huge medical debts that they can't pay, and they're losing their homes and their way of life. And it makes me sad. It really does. And Kurt, I thank you that you've reminded our audience that that's something we need to concentrate on and will. And Kurt, if you're listening, I will, I'll see what I can do. It's just a tragedy. It really is. I want to do a little housekeeping, keeping and clean up from where we were yesterday, like I mentioned. And I want to make a couple of things clear about the mission of this program. I want to let you know that I'm not going to let this program turn into something like a Democratic Underground website where trashing the Democratic candidates for president is the order of the day. I don't know how many of you visit that website. I used to visit it every day. I don't much anymore, because that's the favorite sport right now, is trashing all of the Democratic candidates by, you know, except your own favorite. This program is not going to be a forum for trashing the Democratic candidates for president, because I want one of them to win the presidency. And I will not, outside of the normal political rhetoric that people use, I will not participate in the wholesale trashing of any of them. I'm in favor of Dennis Kucinich winning the nomination. You all know that. And if he doesn't win it, and realistically I don't think he has a shot, then my second favorite is Joe Biden, and then Richardson, and then Chris Dodd, and then John Edwards, and then Obama, and finally Hillary Clinton, in that order. You have your favorites, and I have mine, but I will not trash any of them on this program, because for the good of the nation, one of those candidates must win the Oval Office. One of them must save us from another 4 years of a Republican administration. And I know that you're not happy with all the actions of most of them. I'm well aware of that. I'm also aware of the fact that none of us were happy with all of the actions of any of them. All I'm asking is for you to be realistic and understand that whichever one is picked, in my opinion, that person must defeat the Republican opponent. All of them have faults. All of them have participated in activities or votes that I don't approve of. All of them have certain character flaws. All of them, and I do want to emphasize all of them, are career politicians. And if there's a major flaw for that entire group, that is it. They are all career politicians. And I don't think the founders envisioned it that way. I don't think they wanted men and women to get elected to office and stay there for life. But at the moment, it seems that's what we're stuck with. And frankly, if I had my way, and I know it's impractical, and I might piss people off by saying it so, but in a perfect world, I would have a fleet of buses pull up to the Capitol building, and every single member of the House and the Senate would board the buses and get the hell out of Washington. We need new blood. We need new members who will respond to the wishes of the people. So I won't pick and choose amongst those in office right now who may or may not have done a good job of that. I'll just sweep the place entirely clean, throw on a new paint job, and get all new members who would swear a solemn oath to abide by the wishes of their constituents. Period. Period. Throwing out all of them would involve getting rid of several pretty good people. However, I do think a fresh start would be best. I'm not going to sit here and play that game of my congressman or my senator is better than yours and the rest of them are all bad and mine isn't. They all need to go in a demonstration to politicians everywhere that when the people speak, their elected officials must listen. That's not to say that the majority of the people are always right. Face it. Although I and many of you were against the Bush invasion of Iraq, the majority of the American people were for it. The Bush lies notwithstanding, we would have gone to war if the people had voted on it. And I don't like the big money by an influence in the Democratic Party any more than the next guy, but it is happening. And I don't like the fact that we have dozens of special interest groups trying to gain undue influence on our congressmen and women. And I hate the fact that the low man on the totem pole out there is the independent voter who only wants what's best for everyone. I don't ever expect to get the government to be exactly what I want it to be, but I also don't expect special interest groups to have more influence than average Joe American. But that's the way it is right now, and we need to work against that. I'm simply saying that I'm going to remain a yellow dog Democrat. I always have been. I think I probably always will be. I'm going to do that because I firmly believe in the founding principles of the Democratic Party. I do believe in the Democratic Party as it should be, as it was, not as it necessarily is now. But I do see it as my solemn obligation to take the party back to the greatness where it believed that all men are created equal and all men and women have equal rights. And that all working people in this nation should be afforded the opportunity to raise their families with at least a modicum of dignity and with the support of an entire nation when it comes to education and health care. That's what I believe. And that is what I will continue to work for. And I'll continue to do that through the Democratic Party because the alternative party's principles are simply not acceptable. Absolutely not acceptable. I'd love to know what you think about it. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254.
Spacious skies, forever waits on men. The Democratic Party was born from the spirit of the common man and his sense of fairness and equality. Thomas Jefferson led the movement in 1800 to establish the Democratic Party based on his philosophy of government by, of, and for the people. As Jefferson occupied the executive mansion from 1801 to 1809, the foundation of our party evolved from his abiding faith in inalienable natural rights and an inherent system of moral values. In 1828 and again in 1832, Andrew Jackson served as our nation's president and championed the principles which Thomas Jefferson had promoted. Thomas Jefferson gave our party its being. Andrew Jackson gave our party its meaning. And throughout the last 200 years, the Democratic Party has proven to be the champion of the American people. Time and again, the Democratic Party has fulfilled the vision first articulated by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. And now it's your turn. You are the new leaders of the Democratic Party. You and others like you throughout our great nation have dedicated yourselves to upholding and serving the principles put forward by our founding fathers. The true leadership of the Democratic Party always has and always will be its common people, you and me. And so it remains for Democrats everywhere to stand as one for government by and for the common people. For in that combined will of the people lies the strength, the purpose, the undeniable voice that is the Democratic Party.
Back when progressives were fighting for a woman's right to vote and establishing national parks and trying to pass a new plan called Social Security, conservatives fought them every step of the way. And today, as conservatives try to move us backwards, it's progressives who are working to protect pensions, provide health insurance for all, and achieve energy independence. America at its best. That's progressive. That's you.
And we're back. Welcome back to the Guy James Show. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to give us a call today, we're going to pause in about... oh, I don't know, 6 or 7 minutes and get our guest on the line, John Nichols from The Nation's Magazine today, and talk about this Scotty McClellan thing. It seems as though they're backtracking on it now. Kind of knew they would. We'll discuss that with John. I'd be anxious to hear what you have to say about it as well. Did you really think that Scotty would come up with something that would blow the lid off the whole thing? Is he that bitter? Is he got an axe to grind, or is he selling books? And he threw that little tidbit out there yesterday to just get everybody all riled up, and knowing damn well that he was going to say, "Oh no, 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 that's not what I meant." Oh please, I would never say that about the president and the vice president and all my friends in the White House. So it'll be interesting to find out what exactly they have to say about all that. It's odd. I have not seen a column by Michelle Malkin yet about it. I went over there and looked at the National Republic online. They haven't talked about it. The Instapundit and Hugh Hewitt and all the other right-wingers. I suppose Limbaugh's probably commented on it by now, the drug junkie, and I'd assume that he's probably sloughed it off as though there's nothing to it. That'd be the normal way of handling anything damaging to the Republicans by the right-wingers. That's what they normally do. Oh, that! No. No, that's nothing. Don't think nothing of it. It's nothing. Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'd be absolutely interesting to see what happens along that, and we'll discuss that coming up in just a few minutes. Any of you traveling this weekend? Are you flying? Just checked a little while ago on, we have a new airport here, a beautiful, beautiful new facility, and just checked a little while ago, have it online here as to the flight delays or anything, and so far, everything today, it looks like every single flight but one is on time, and there are a lot of flights that go out of Southwest Regional Airport here, so it looks like things are running rather smoothly in this part of the country. It's probably up when you get up into the Eastern Corridor or out toward Houston, particularly where things begin to fall apart, maybe O'Hare as well. But so far here locally, things running pretty smooth. And it's probably indicative of how things are going generally around the country that the incoming flights seem to be on time. That's a good sign. So if you're traveling, maybe things won't be quite so bad this weekend after all. We're not flying any place this weekend, but I know some of you are. And I've heard a great deal from a lot of people who are and just dreading it. That's something I used to love. And I still enjoy it, but it's getting a whole lot less enjoyable, don't you think? You go to the airport nowadays, you ought to just wear rubber sandals and no socks or something so that you don't have to take your shoes off and, you know, tie your shoes again and all that thing, that whole mess going through security. I know. A lot of people say, oh, we need that, but time and again it's been proven that it's not even necessarily very efficient and not necessarily thorough enough. I still say everybody ought to fly naked. That way, if the baggage was all stowed underneath and, you know, you wouldn't have anything to check, they could serve you water on the plane, but that way, you know, there'd be no shoe bombers or anything like that. Leave it to me to think up something like that. But so far, I haven't heard any horror stories. And checking out the Dow Jones, the last I heard today, let me see if I can call that up right here, right now. The Dow Jones is, where are we at on the Dow Jones today? It was down, it's down 145 points right now. So it's down to 12,865, up and down all day long. 145 points down. That's a 1.11% change today. It doesn't affect my life directly because of not having a portfolio like some people have, not having one at all, as a matter of fact. But indirectly, it's going to affect us all, I'm sure. So we'll be on the lookout and keep track of that every single day. We're going to pause for a break, get our guest on the line, and we'll be right back.
I'm walking. Yes, indeed. We're all walking because walking is good medicine for your heart. The American Heart Association says for every hour of regular vigorous exercise we do, like very brisk walking, we could live 2 hours longer. So start walking. Imagine if we walk to the moon and back, we could live forever. Start walking for life. Take your mother. Take your brother.
I'm walking, yes indeed, and I'm talking about you.
Take your heart for a walk. Join the START movement at AmericanHeart.org/START for tools, tips, and more. Everybody now, I'm walking, yes indeed, and I'm talking. You'll feel better, and you could live longer.
Sky for our love.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show. Welcome back, everybody. Glad to have all of you along with us here on this delightful day in Southwest Florida. Hope it's nice where you are as well. Of course, we're talking to people all around the world, so we could have people in knee-deep in snow and I don't know what all. But anyway, it's a beautiful day here. As promised right now, we've got from The Nation's Magazine our guest today. We've got John Nichols. John, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
We specifically had you on today to talk about this little Scotty McClellan thing going on right now, and it's odd the way it's going. Now I'm seeing that McClellan's publisher saying, oh, gee, he didn't mean to say anything about the president. He didn't mean that at all. What are we doing here, do you think, John? Are we selling books? Are we backtracking? What is it?
Well, I think that the first thing we ought to do is accept people at their word. And the piece that was released by Public Affairs Press, a section from Scott McClellan's book, very specifically suggests that Scott McClellan made deceptive statements to Congress and the American people via the podium of the White House press office at a critical point when Americans, particularly our legislative and judicial branches of government, were trying to determine whether a crime had occurred. Now, McClellan says that he did not intentionally deceive us, but that he was given misinformation by five people: Scooter Libby, Karl Rove, Andrew Card, the White House Chief of Staff, Vice President Cheney, and President Bush. That is what is specifically said. Now, you can, try and parse that however you want, but to my mind, no matter what games are played now as people start to get scared and pressured and all the other things that happen in politics, I think we ought to take that to the bank. We ought to go and as Shelley Pingree, the former head of Common Cause, suggests, hold congressional hearings. Let's call Scott McClellan up. Let's let him testify. And let's also use this as an avenue to open up the question of what did the president know and when did he know it? And remember, this is not about outing Valerie Plame. That is a dramatically secondary issue. That is not the focus of that we should be on.
Absolutely.
This is about, did the president, the vice president, members of their administration conspire to punish or to harm Joe Wilson because Joe Wilson had revealed the lies that were used to sell the war in Iraq? If that happened, if there was a conspiracy in which the president and vice president were involved to attack a critic of the administration who had revealed the truth about why we went to war in Iraq, then they have committed impeachable offenses. These are the offenses that Richard Nixon was impeached for, the second article of impeachment, agreed to by Democrats and Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee in 1974. We don't have to play a lot of games with Valerie Plame and whether she was a CIA agent or whether she's not. All that is secondary to the question of, did the president and vice president seek to harm, use the powers of their office, seek to harm a critic of the administration because that critic of the administration had revealed the truth to the American people?
That is a secondary issue. I think they were very successful in making Valerie Plame the issue and were successful in saying, hey, what's the big deal? Everybody knew about that anyway. All of Washington knew that she was CIA. Yes, maybe we did flap our tongues a little bit when we shouldn't, but it was no big deal. But you're right. It was not the underlying reason all this needs to be looked into. It goes much further beyond that.
Yeah, and it's a very simple, you see, we often make these things so complicated that we talk ourselves into not being able to do anything, when in fact, this is not a complicated issue. it is not only inappropriate, but unconstitutional for the President of the United States to lie to Congress and the American people about issues involving our reasons for going to war. We have a constitutionally defined system of checks and balances, separation of powers. That system only works when the commander-in-chief is forthcoming and is honest and functional. When he fails to be so, you can say, oh, well, it's just politics or it's the necessity of the moment. Well, those are nice excuses, but there's nothing about that in the Constitution. What the Constitution says is they got to work together. When you don't do that, it is an impeachable offense.
Well, we're not talking about just any old offense here now. If there is this group, these four or five, we're talking about conspiracy, because the law says what any act with two or more that get involved to cover up. We're talking about conspiracy. That's serious.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is. And again, though, we don't have to have a law. I mean, that's one of the things. People get really tripped up on thinking that on holding a president to account, you've got to find some felony or some misdemeanor. No, the founders were very, very specific about this. They rejected applying criminal statutes to the accountability components of the Constitution. They said instead that you could find anything from high crimes to misdemeanors, the biggest to the smallest, and that these were, the president was to be held account not if he was convicted in a court of law, but if the House of Representatives and the Senate determined that he had erred against the Constitution, that he had acted in an unconstitutional manner. Well, I've got to tell you, we have tremendous evidence that this president has done that. And what Scott McClellan has given us is an additional confirmation of some of our worst suspicions. Because remember, if we allow a president of the United States to punish his critics, to use his office to punish his critics, then really none of us are safe. And certainly the political discourse and democracy are not safe.
Absolutely. Already, you know, we're starting to hear parallels between this and Watergate and Nixon, and Scotty McClellan is now the John Dean of this administration. First of all, John Dean brought the truth to light while things were still going on, while things were still fresh, not, what, 3 years later. And secondly, I personally don't think there's any similarities between Nixon and Bush, in as much as I think the Bush administration, the Bush White House, is far more powerful and perhaps even more secretive, but especially more powerful in getting their own way on everything than Nixon ever thought about being.
Well, I think we only have to go to the man you mentioned a minute ago, John Dean. John Dean wrote a book, the title of which was Worse Than Watergate. This was several years ago, before much of what we now know came out, in which he said that the high crimes and misdemeanors of the Bush administration, its actions, its approaches, are dramatically worse than, more dangerous to the country than what you saw during Watergate. I agree with that. I think that's an appropriate assessment of the current circumstance.
Do you think the Democrats will come up with the spine to do anything about this? Do you think they'll...
If we make them... They will not do it willingly. They've made a political calculus that so many bad things have come out against Bush and the Republicans that they can just step back and do nothing and be rewarded with votes come next November. It becomes absolutely essential for citizens, particularly in Florida, to confront candidates and their representatives and to say, hey, if you want to be the Democratic nominee for president, or if in Florida, because the spouses are campaigning, if you want your husband or wife to be the Democratic nominee for president, you must address these issues. We are not satisfied merely to be voters. We are citizens, and as citizens we demand that you give us more than just an opportunity to vote in an election. You need to prove during this remaining 14 months, almost 14 months, of the Bush presidency, that you will hold this president to account for his high crimes and misdemeanors. If you won't do that, if you're not willing to do that, then we're going to look around. We're going to look at other candidates. And if the candidates for president hear this on the campaign trail, then I can assure you that Congress will hear it as well. So Florida is actually remarkably well positioned because they are very interested in what happens in your primary come January.
And so you
folks have a lot of opportunities to ask questions, and you should.
And one would think that reasonably minded Republicans would also want to listen to the facts here, because forget about this election right now. If we elect somebody that you despise, if we elect Hillary Clinton, do you want Hillary Clinton to have the latitude, the same latitude that George Bush is using right now? You know you don't.
Well, the truth of the matter is that what I always say to my very conservative Republican friends is, you may think George Bush is touched by God and is a noble man and would never do wrong with the powers, the immense powers he's been given, but do you really want to hand those powers to Hillary Clinton? And I've noticed how their faces go white and begin to shake.
Yes. Ah, yes, that's enough to make them tremble, I know. They're deathly afraid of her. John, your book, The Genius of Impeachment, you're somebody that knows a lot about the subject. I've read the book, The Cure for Royalism, and it seems that our leaders get a touch of that disease, the royalism, don't they, sooner or later?
They all do. Democrats and Republicans, conservatives and liberal. That's why the founders rested the power to impeach really in the people. You know, the Congress outlines that it is the House that brings the articles of impeachment, but they made the House the chamber with the authority to bring this issue to light because the House of Representatives is closest to the people. It's elected every 2 years at a district level. It is, as a whole of the federal government, the agency, the branch that people are most likely to influence and touch. That's because Jefferson, Madison, and the others believe that impeachment should be an organic process. The people should cry out for change. The members of the House would hear that and bring that issue to Washington. I do believe that impeachment is a very, very tall hill to climb. It's a long road, and we may not make it.
And it should be a tall hill to climb.
No, it should be easy. But what I'm telling you is I'm excited that Robert Wexler, the congressman from the Palm Beach area in Florida, has said that the House Judiciary Committee should open impeachment hearings on Dick Cheney. I hope that Floridians will talk to other members of their congressional delegation and emphasize very strongly to them that Wexler's right, and we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can elect a new president in 2008 while holding to account the president and the vice president of the moment.
Well, I certainly hope so. And to clear up a difference they may think we have here, you said it should be a tall hill to climb. And I mean, I think it should be a tall hill to climb in as much as I think it shouldn't be taken lightly.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be done, you know, on a whim or for some minor infraction.
But actually, you know what I was saying? I was saying it's going to be hard. I think we're right on the same page that we have the impeachable offenses, and it should be doable at this point. What I'm saying is, unfortunately, we have many Democrats in Congress that don't want to do this. And so that's what makes it a tall hill. The evidence is there. The necessity is there. It is now merely a matter of finding the political will. And again, I hold out a great faith in the American people to say, you know, look, again, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can choose a new president while holding the current president to account.
John, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. I do want to encourage everybody to be sure and take a good look at your book, The Genius of Impeachment. It's a great read, and you will know a whole lot more what we're talking about here, the process and all of impeachment, after you're done reading it. John Nichols from The Nation magazine, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be on with you.
Thanks. John, what he doesn't know about impeachment isn't worth knowing. If you've read his book, and I have a copy of it sitting right here. It's a fascinating read. You talk about a prolific author and thinker, by John Nichols. Check out The Nation magazine. If you haven't, you really must. You should always take a look at The Nation magazine. It's something that everybody on the left would do well to read every single month. I do believe that. We're going to pause for a break, and we'll be right back.
One of these days,
Listen to the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director. Thank you. Thank you very much for joining us here on the program this afternoon. And if you'd like to express your views on the program, we'd love to hear them. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. And should you have an unlimited calling plan and like to use your minutes, 941-876-6896. I do want to remind everybody to take a look at the website. We are in the process of updating it. We have changed some phone numbers on there, so it actually deleted some phone numbers. And also, the address has been changed, okay? We haven't moved our facilities or anything. We've just got a different post office and all that, a big rearrangement going on here locally. So do take a look at that. The new address is on there. And we appreciate it. And we're going to be having a interactive blog going on there, too. So you'll be able to add your comments, and we'll be able to go back and forth on that. So something new, and I hope you all join in on that. What do you do right now if you're Patrick Fitzgerald, the special prosecutor? What do you do? You've done your level best to get Scooter Libby prosecuted. You have prosecuted Scooter Libby. You've convicted him of a crime, of a felony, and the President of the United States has pardoned him. What do you do? Do you take a look at this latest revelation of Scotty McClellan's and say, hey, there's more to it? I knew there was all along. And hey, let's not make the mistake here. Patrick Fitzgerald, if anybody knows that this White House is dirty, Patrick Fitzgerald knows it. Patrick Fitzgerald probably knows everything that Scotty McClellan already knew and just couldn't prove it. And now he's got a guy come out and actually say some of the things in public that Fitzgerald probably surmised all along. Doesn't anybody want to tell me that Fitzgerald didn't know that Karl Rove was in this up to his ears? He tried his damnedest to get Karl Rove. Nobody wants to tell me that Patrick Fitzgerald doesn't know, probably for a fact, that Dick Cheney is in this up to his ears, that those two lied and had a massive conspiracy to cover this up. And I think no one knows any better than Patrick Fitzgerald than the Bush administration pardoned Scooter Libby to keep him quiet. That deal was probably in the works all along. Scooter, keep your mouth shut and we'll take care of you. Scooter, we'll keep you out of prison. Don't you worry about that. We'll make damn sure that you make lots of money for the rest of your natural life. That's the game that's played in Washington. That is the game that Patrick Fitzgerald knows damn well is being played in the White House. The question is, will Patrick Fitzgerald feel so violated over this whole thing that he will turn around, and go back after it? I mean, there's nothing he can do about Scooter Libby. Once the president has ruled on that, even if the president is impeached, and he won't be, but even if he were, there's nothing they can do legally to turn that around. Scooter Libby is off scot-free, unless they could find a different crime on him. And I think Fitzgerald did everything he could to indict him any which way he could. But will Patrick Fitzgerald have the fortitude, and I know he does have a great amount of resolve. He did in going after this case, and no one could certainly accuse him of being partisan in any way, shape, or form. He did go after Scooter Libby. But he found out that this White House is probably better at stonewalling than any administration in our history. They covered up a lot of crap and got away with it. And Fitzgerald knows it. Now, will he feel that he got burned enough that he'll go back with a vengeance and try again? Will he go back after Karl Rove once again? Because he can do that. He can't touch Scooter Libby. But he most certainly can go after Karl Rove. He most certainly can go after Dick Cheney. He could most certainly go after George W. Bush. Although I doubt it'll ever come to that. But Rove, Cheney, well within the realm of possibility. And I think a man like Patrick Fitzgerald, well, we shall see. I had unknowingly passed along false information and 5 of the highest ranking officials in the administration were involved in my doing so. Rove, Libby, the vice president, the president's chief of staff, and the president himself. Well, now they're backtracking and saying, well, I didn't mean to imply that the president knew this because he was duped in this also. And I guess besides selling books and making a fortune, why did Scotty McClellan do this? I have never been able to understand how some of the press secretaries can go out and literally sell their souls, know that they're standing there lying day after day, knowing it. I mean, look at Tony Snow. Probably the most articulate liar that there's ever been on the podium for the White House press corps. I think he's the best. I think he's absolutely the most well-spoken press secretary that any president ever had. And I say that because I did dislike him immensely and know that he was a tool for Fox News and know that's why they chose him, because he would be a good soldier and march in lockstep with anything he wanted to do. I don't think you will ever read a book by Tony Snow coming back on anybody in this administration. McClellan? I don't know. I don't know what it'll turn out to be with McClellan. How far this will go, who knows? It's early on in this whole thing yet. It's going to be one of those things. There's going to be a lot of people write books about this administration. We've had people write books already besides Scotty McClellan. His book's not going to be out for a while yet. Admitting that he told multiple lies. And I never understood how these guys can do that. They know damn well that they're going out and tell a whopper of a lie, and yet they do it anyway. I don't know how they live with themselves. But I think that Dennis Kucinich's articles of impeachment against Dick Cheney, that have been referred to the, you know, the House Judiciary Committee, I think immediately, as soon as the Thanksgiving recess is over, that we should put immense pressure on Chairman Conyers that he bring Scotty McClellan before that committee. He can explain whether or not he got lied to, or whether he was really a another Baghdad Bob. It'd be interesting to find that out, whether he was or not. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Well, I guess we got a dial tone. That's not too interesting. Let me see if I can push the right buttons here. Guess not. Okay, 866-546-5254. We'd love to hear your opinions on that. And moreover, let's take a look at who the Republicans have running for office right now, and where they came down on all this thing. You know, up to now, the Republican front runners have totally supported pardoning Scooter Libby, or have run from the question. Many of them have run from the question. But this new info that we've all heard here in the last couple of days makes it absolutely clear that not only did Scooter Libby lie, probably the president himself did. We don't know that for a fact, but probably he did. And, you know, the American people really have the right to know all about this. And they also have the right to know how the presidential candidates on the Republican side feel about this. Fred Thompson raised millions of dollars to defend convicted Scooter Libby. Thompson urged a pardon. He helped raise millions of dollars as a chair of the now convicted Scooter Libby's defense fund. He said he reached out to Libby and offered to help. He said, "I called him up and offered to help him." He strongly supported the pardon for Libby. You know, he was so happy when Libby got pardoned and let everybody know it. He said this will allow a good American who's done a lot for his country to resume his life. Well, one could say that about a lot of people in prison, couldn't they? They've all done a few good deeds. Mitt Romney, even though he denied every commutation and pardon request when he was a governor, he publicly stated that he was keeping the options open when asked whether he'd consider pardoning Scooter Libby. Romney said it's worth looking at, and I'll study it very closely if I'm lucky enough to be president, and I'll keep the option open. Well, not exactly an indictment of the process there, would you say? Rudy Giuliani said it was excessive punishment. I think the option the president really has is commutation. The part of it that I find outrageous is the sentence, said Rudy Giuliani. So, one after another, leading Republican candidates, they thought this was all, term my mother used to like, hunky-dory. Everything was just fine. He's a liar. He's a cheat. He's a felon. But let's pardon him, and we all think it's fine, because even though it is a felon, and even though he's convicted by a jury of his peers, and even though Patrick Fitzgerald, a well-respected prosecutor, did his utmost to prosecute him and brought forth a mountain of evidence, yeah, despite all of that, and even though George W. Jr. Bush said that he would fire anybody that knowingly gave false information to this whole thing, all of that, after all of that, why, it's just fine and dandy. The Republicans don't think it was anything serious at all. You look at the right-wing pundits. You look at your Hannity and your drug junkie Limbaugh and your Laura Ingram and who else? All of them in unison. Oh, no, we can't, you know, the Scooter. Oh, that thing was Scooter. Come on. That wasn't it. Just a little misunderstanding. And besides that, the jury didn't understand all the facts. So let's pardon him. After all, he's one of us. He's not one of you. He's one of us. And the same justice system that works for you doesn't apply to us. Oh, no. No, no. We're different. We're the royalty in this country. We're the elite. We don't abide by the same rules that you do. We don't have to go to prison like you do if you would be convicted of this felony. No, no. It's different, folks. It's different. And all one has to do is take a look at the statement of these Republican candidates for president. And you will see exactly how they feel about it. That they are, in fact, different. That they do not have to follow the same rules that you and I do. And that they can, at will, lie, cheat, and steal from the American public, and it's okay. It's okay. Well, I don't think it is okay. And now we have Scotty backpedaling on this whole thing, saying he isn't alleging that Bush took part in the conspiracy to mislead. Don't know. Maybe the rest of them, but what do you think? Was this a statement just to sell a hell of a lot of books all of a sudden, get all this interest up? Now, the book isn't finished yet, and it won't be out till spring or summer of next year. But now they planted this little seed in everybody's minds. Oh, I'll have to get that book when it comes out, whether it's true or not. So maybe this was a ploy on the part of the publisher, on the part of Scotty McClellan. Although it is hard to imagine that Scotty McClellan could make a statement like that about Cheney and Rove and get away with it in the eyes of the folks in the White House. We shall see. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program today. After the top of the hour, I want to read you a letter that I got from a friend of mine that's most interesting. Well, sort of a friend. Well, maybe not a friend. From somebody I know of. And to clear something else up, I mean, we talked briefly yesterday about these polls that were taking place, and particularly on the Tom Hartman show. I wrote for some advice on that and some facts for that, and I got them back and said that the November 2nd poll on the Hartman program, and I don't think you can call it much of a poll because, after all, there were only about, 75 votes altogether, so that's hardly a cross-section of American, hardly a cross-section of Democrats or liberals. Edwards won the straw poll on the Tom Hartman show with 41 votes, Dennis Kucinich with 21, Obama with 7, and the rest of the candidates all got 1 each. So that's, 62, 69, and 4, 73 votes. So hardly what I'd call a scientific study or cross-section or a reliable poll of any kind, but Edwards won it almost 2-1 over Dennis Kucinich. So that's what we know about that. I was puzzled by that yesterday when we heard it on the program, and I had to do a little research and find out. You know me. I always have to find out every last little detail about everything. But when we come back about the after the top of the hour, I want to talk to you about this modern-day Republican Party, where they've come from, how they arrived at where they're at today, and their so-called values that they have. Are they real or not real? And who do they really, really stand for? So we'll do that after the top of the hour in the news. You're listening to The Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director. And we'll be back right after the news. You stay tuned now. You hear?
This is the Quality News Network. Despite rising gas prices and a gloomy economic outlook, millions of Americans are traveling in what is predicted to be the largest Thanksgiving travel season ever. Planes, trains, and automobiles will transport a record 38.7 million U.S. travelers. The personal information of 25 million Britons has been lost, exposing them to the threat of fraud. Two disks containing the entire British Tax Department database relating to child benefits were lost in the mail when a junior official neglected to send them to auditors as registered parcel. Light sweet crude this morning rose above $99 a barrel on Asian markets to a record $99.29. Analysts say traders are concerned about Northern Hemisphere winter supplies and refinery problems, We'll have the latest numbers in a moment. President General Pervez Musharraf is considering quitting his military post and taking a civilian oath of office by Saturday. Musharraf has been under intense pressure to do so by the West and his opponents. The embattled president still faces the threat of opposition forces coalescing and ousting him. The French government and striking transit workers are back at the bargaining table trying to end the eight-day-old strike. Earlier this morning, striking hardliners set fire to railway cables and signal boxes, causing delays in a coordinated act of sabotage on France's high-speed railway system. Invitations have been sent to 49 world leaders for next week's U.S.-sponsored Middle East Peace Conference. The three-day meeting will be held in Washington and Annapolis, Maryland, and is aimed at jump-starting the first Israeli-Palestinian peace talks in 7 years. The BBC reports thousands of displaced Iraqis are returning home. According to Iraq's Ministry of Migration, about 1,000 people are returning daily. Officials say the drop in violence, improved security, as well as incentives from the Iraqi government are responsible for the rising homecoming numbers. Former French President Jacques Chirac is facing a formal investigation for embezzlement of public funds when he was mayor of Paris. The allegations stem from a scheme in which city jobs were given to political sympathizers. Chirac denies the charges. According to a military spokesperson, yesterday's roadside bombing of a U.S. convoy in Baghdad was carried out with munitions made in Iran. One U.S. soldier and one Iraqi interpreter were killed. 3 troops were wounded. In London, a terrorist group from Ghana was sentenced to 33 years for helping in an attempted Al-Qaeda suicide bombing plot in July 2005. The attacks were to occur 2 weeks after the suicide bombings that killed 52 people on trains and buses. This is QNN.
Hi, I'm Brian Gingrich of Monterey Mattress Company. The only way to travel is by using the very best, and the very best in a major sleep product is any mattress from Monterey Mattress Company. Literally serving all parts of the world, we have been building the finest latex foam and innerspring mattresses for well over 20 years. Using our world-famous hotels as a measuring stick, you'll more often hear the name Monterey Mattress, as we supply over 100 resort hotels in this area. Far exceeding industry standards, these mattresses are available to you at factory prices. In addition to the local recognition, Monterey Mattress Company has been shipping beds worldwide to the many visitors who have experienced a great night's sleep here. This is the ultimate endorsement enjoyed by very few businesses. Monterey Mattress Company. We simply build the best, whether for your home or world-renowned resorts. Visit us today at 1714 Contra Costa in Sand City or on the World Wide Web at MontereyMattress.com. Sleep like a panda bear.
Doctors are now warning if you feel sleepy after a big Thanksgiving Day meal, don't blame the turkey. The amino acid tryptophan in the holiday bird is the usual suspect for feeling sleepy, but nutritionists say diners at the traditional meal have simply eaten too much. University researchers say they've mapped the genetic code for 2 strains of drug-resistant tuberculosis. The doctors say understanding the way the mutations work will assist in the effort to improve treatment of the disease. British scientists have discovered the fossilized claw of a 390-million-year-old prehistoric bug. The size of the sea scorpion that it was attached to is an estimated 8 feet long. Researchers say the discovery suggests spiders, insects, and crabs were much larger than previously thought. U.S. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson says he expects there to be more home loan defaults next year compared to this year. He also urged lenders to approach the mortgage crisis and the struggling homeowners collectively as opposed to individually. Retailer Limited Brands blamed unseasonably warm autumn weather for poor sales and 48% plunge in quarterly profits. The Ohio-based company lowered its financial outlook. Light sweet crude is currently trading at $97.40 a barrel. Gold is trading at $798.50 an ounce. And on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is down 123 points. The Nasdaq is down 18 points. There are always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Jay Galley.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. Can we get progress?
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody. Glad to have all of you along with us today. Hope you don't have to go to the grocery store this evening. I understand the ones here locally are somewhat crowded. If you haven't been to the grocery, if you haven't bought your stuff for your if you haven't bought your stuff for your Thanksgiving meal tomorrow, forget it. Stop down at the 7-Eleven, get yourself a sandwich. That's what I suggest. It's just going to be too crowded to go to the grocery store. Don't want any part of that kind of a thing tomorrow. Oh, I mean today, really. Hate going to the store when it's busy. I'm not good at going in the store and standing in line. Are you? Even small lines, I get frustrated. I think we're all spoiled now, but you know, you go to the big grocery stores here. Here, the big ones are the Publix supermarket. Publix and, I can't even think of the name of the other one. Publix has done a good job of running everybody out of business, but they've got 20 checkout lanes at least. And got like three of them open. Even at 5 o'clock, 5:30 after work, when people flood to the grocery store, they'll have about three of them. Well, we don't have enough help. Now, how many years they've been doing this? How many years they've been building new stores and you know they never have enough help. They never staff all those checkout lanes, and yet the same way with banks. Have you noticed that banks have got 12 places for tellers to stand, and they got two tellers with all the rest of them. This window closed. Now, they've been doing this for a long, long time. They know they don't have enough help now, nor will they ever have enough help because they're greedy bastards and they don't want to hire enough people to do the job because it would take the money away from the bottom line and their stockholders wouldn't get the dividends that they like to get. Let's just lay it on the table and tell it like it is, okay? Service has gone by the wayside in lieu of, instead of profits. I mean, for profits, services is going by the wayside so that the stockholders can have more profits, period. And the big box stores are running everybody out of business, all the little guys out of business, where you get the good service when you get in a small store, a mom-and-pop store. Yes, sir, can I help you? Let me show you this. Well, what about this? What about that? You've got somebody there that can help you and give you information on anything you want to buy. You go into a big box store, and you can run around for an hour until you find somebody that will even take the time to talk to you or has the knowledge to talk to you about a product. And so, goodbye service, hello profits, and you, the customer, well, you can just go pound sand because we don't care. Because, you see, we've run everybody else out of business. We've run all of our competitors out of business, and you have to come and shop with us now, you see. That's what it's all about. Get all the little guys out of business. You have to shop with us, and if you want some service, why, that's too damn bad, isn't it? All right. How'd I get going on that? Oh, yeah, I was about going to the grocery store, how I wouldn't want to go to the grocery store right any time between now and the time they close. They do close here, like 10 o'clock or something like that. When I still lived up north, some of them stayed open. Well, Walmart stays open 24 hours, but, of course, I will not step foot in a Walmart. Will not. I would like to be tested on that. I live in an area where there's a super Walmart within 5 minutes of everybody in the entire area. And I mean that. There's super Walmarts everywhere, and they're building like five more. They actually wanted to build new super Walmarts down the road from where I live, 2 miles apart. Two new super Walmarts. No kidding. But I wonder how far away I'd have to live if I live next door to a Walmart and 20 miles from the nearest store where I could get groceries. Would I give up and go to Walmart? I don't think so. I really don't think so. That's how stubborn I am. Hey, I promised you I'd read you a letter I got from a good friend of mine. Close personal friend. Dear Guy. And I'd like to know which one of you did this to me. I'd like to know which one of you sent my name in. I'm going to find out. If I could, I would find out. Dear Guy, as a strong supporter of our president and our party, I wanted to make sure you had the first opportunity to have an official 2008 RNC calendar featuring President Bush. The images in the calendar span the entire 7 years of George's presidency, and I hope they will remind you of what's great about our country and how high the stakes are for America in the upcoming elections. To receive your limited edition 2008 RNC calendar, please make an online gift of $25 or more to the RNC today. Guy, grassroots leaders like you are the backbone of the Republican Party. Your continuing commitment to the RNC is critical to keeping the White House in Republican hands and regaining our majorities in the U.S. House and Senate in the 2008 elections. Best wishes, Laura Bush. Man, I'll tell you, that just brings a tear to my eye that Laura would be so kind as to write me a letter like this and, you know, want me to have that RNC calendar, that special edition RNC calendar, limited edition. And, you know, without asking anything of me except a measly $25. I bet all of you don't have a limited edition 2008 RNC calendar, nor were you invited to buy one, now were you? Mm-hmm. See, that's how special we are here at the Guy James Show. Laura Bush sends... Oh, I find out which one of you did this to me. Your name is Mud. Oh, my. Now, I see the markets have closed for the day, and let's take a look here. 133 points down today. Is that have I got that right here? 133 down at 4:11 p.m. The Dow closed at minus 133. It's down to 12,927. And let's see, gold is down. Gold was up today by $7, $798. And oil, where did we go on oil here today? Let's see. Well, don't have that on this page. But crude oil, 97.29. Minus 74 cents, it says. All right. So much for the market today. You can all relax. You didn't lose too much, right? 866-546-5254. Oh, Suzanne says, see, one of you has always got to get the last word in the chat room. And by the way, if you're listening to the show and not in the Head On Radio Network chat room, and it's that simple, folks, headonradionetwork.com. Go in there and sign up for the chat room. There's always somebody got to get the last word in. And Suzanne says, you know, when I ask if any of you had one of those calendars, Suzanne said, no, but I have a pocket constitution signed by Dennis Kucinich. Well, Suzanne, I think that's infinitely more valuable than a train car load of George W. Bush calendars. Thanks for letting me know that. Yes. You know, lately I've been thinking that a lot of Americans, and maybe even most Americans, don't appreciate the significance of the political revolution that's taken place in the last couple of decades. And I do believe that when the history of this time of these times are written, there's going to be a lot of people who read it and wonder just what the hell the rest of us were thinking. You know, they're going to look at the group of us who call ourselves liberals and progressive and wonder why it was so easy for the right to take control of our country. And we've let them do it. We have. I mean, I understand that they have an advantage over us, but the right has taken control of this country, and you know we're trying to get it back right now. But I wonder how many people are just aware of the sinister motives of the Republican Party of today. I think it's worth taking a look at the at a brief history of the Republican Party since the time of Warren G. Harding, when Harding was president, and I'm a little bit of an expert on this because I grew up in Harding hometown territory and the Marion Star newspaper. Harding, and you know, sat on the front porch of his home, and his he's got a memorial in Marion, Ohio. Let me tell you, if you've never been there, Warren G. Harding has a memorial, the Harding Memorial in Marion, Ohio, there in the south end of town, that's befitting anything in Washington. It could sit right on the mall in Washington and be right at home. It could be sitting right over by the Jefferson Monument and be right at home. Warren G. Harding, imagine that. But when Harding was the president, the Republican Party had become so absolutely, you know, filthy and rife with corporate corruption that there wasn't even a problem amongst the corporate masters of the day to literally and literally reach right into the White House and buy themselves some almost free oil. And I know you've all heard about it, the Teapot Dome scandal, which happened when Harding issued an executive order to transfer control of naval oil reserves at Teapot Dome, Wyoming. And Elk Hills, California, from the Navy Department. They transferred that by executive order from the Navy Department to the Department of the Interior. And so it was that Harding had a good friend that was the Secretary of the Interior. And it seems like he didn't have enough money to suit himself. So some fat cat Republicans. Henry Sinclair, an oil operator, and Edward Doney loaned the Secretary of the Interior, Albert B. Fall. They each lent him $100,000 interest-free, wink, wink. You're never going to have to give it back. And he pretty much just signed over the oil to him. And so they got to pump all the oil they wanted. All they had to pay was $100,000. Nice little deal. There was no competitive bidding on it or anything like that, and that was pretty much the, you know, that's the gist of the Teapot Dome scandal. And it was a big mess. And that, along with the crash of 1929 and the Depression under Hoover, really is what enabled Franklin Roosevelt to gain a huge majority that kept the Democrats in power for a lot of years. The Teapot Dome scandal really did open the eyes of the American public as to the just naked grab for money that had been taking place in the Republican Party. In fact, it's all the Republican Party was about. A grab for money was the standard agenda of the Republican Party in those days. Does that not sound familiar to you? But to keep the Republican Party from actually going extinct, going out of business, when Roosevelt, you know, the Republicans had to regroup. And born out of that reorganization was the moderate wing of the Republican Party. I know there really is no such thing today, but they had to become more moderate. They had to. And the public realized that the Republican policies were largely responsible for the stock market crash and the Depression. And so the election of FDR in 1932 really was a repudiation of Republicans. That is what it was. And the public wised up so much, in fact, that by the beginning of the Second World War, they'd lost the Congress, too, at least in part because of fighting against Roosevelt's Lend-Lease program, which was aimed to help Britain defend itself from Hitler. And it didn't help that the Republicans were willing to let Britain fend for themselves, along with the fact that they had warm words for Hitler, which were not remembered real fond when he declared war on us. So they literally dug themselves a hole and jumped into it. So at that point, the Republicans really didn't have a choice but to try and present a moderate face to the American public. They had to forget their being so radical and show America that, gee whiz, we're just common folks like you. We're just common folks like you. We're not money grubbers. We're just ordinary guys like you. So, you know, after a while, they got Eisenhower elected. And Eisenhower was very, very moderate. They put on their moderate face, but they never really forgot their roots. And their roots goes right back to that Teapot Dome scandal and other big money things that happened to the Republican Party. Their roots was corporatism, it was big money, and it was government for the rich by the rich. They never forgot their roots, and they still haven't. And I wonder how many of you share some of the same memories that I had when I was a kid, where, you know, when I grew up, and I know some of you have experienced this, where the adults that I knew, they would have spit on Roosevelt's grave if they were given the chance. They hated Roosevelt. And this was, when I was growing up, a dozen years after the man was dead. And I don't have to tell you that those men passed their hatred of the New Deal onto their sons, like it was some sort of a family heirloom. And I kid you not, most of the kids I went to school with were Republicans, and I dare say they had no idea as to why they were Republicans, and still don't to this day. Because this hatred for Roosevelt ran that deep amongst the Republicans. And the reason they hated Roosevelt had nothing to do with anything other than the fact it kept the fat cat Republicans from making their fortunes. They blame Roosevelt for destroying their beloved Republican Party and they love to use that word, for socializing the country. Social Security, welfare, they called it relief in those days. And unemployment insurance, you know, these were all commie programs that had to be done away with. And over and over and over again, when I was a kid, I heard how anti-American those things were. Oh, Social Security had unemployment insurance and welfare. The commies were taking over. The John Birch Society was flourishing at that time. And Joseph McCarthy was their god, still is the god of some of these right-wingers today. Can you say Laura Ingraham? And the despicable Democrats were going to destroy their country. Even then, you see, they considered the whole thing theirs. And as a teenager, I dismissed these people as a bunch of wackos, but I think you can see that today their political heirs are flourishing in the modern-day Republican Party. People like Hannity and Limbaugh and Laura Ingraham and Bill Kristol and who else? Tom DeLay, Mitch McConnell, Charles Krauthammer, and a host of other wide-eyed crazies who may as well have stood shoulder-to-shoulder with McCarthy in his hearings, because they're every bit as crazy and every bit as misguided, and they're flaming zealots just like he was. I might leave Limbaugh out of that. I think he's just a political whore. I've said over and over again, I think he'd be a Democrat if you offered him enough money. I do believe that. But by and large, the moderates held on to their party for a few years during the Eisenhower administration, you know, until Nixon came along. And with Nixon hitting the stage, the radicals saw their chance to gain control again, and they did. And when the Democrats, along with a lot of the moderate Republicans, saw what Nixon was about, and they forced him to resign, they were absolutely livid. They were furious. They knew they couldn't do anything about it at the time, but they lay in the weeds waiting and planning their hysterical, radical agenda for years. And they've taken over the party again, lock, stock, and barrel. The right-wing extremists have not just hijacked the party, they've come out of hiding and they have reassumed what they think is their rightful place, out in the open as representatives and advocates of the true republicanism that's been underground for 100 years, like rats in the sewer. They may not have been very visible, but they were there all the time waiting for the right time to emerge, and they have come out. This is not a fun bunch, certainly not. So you know, along comes Nixon, and I just wanted to give you an outline that of my opinion of where this party has come from. You know, Nixon gets in the office, and the moderates like Howard Baker and all, they realize what a rat Richard Nixon was. They realize what was going on. And, you know, Nixon used the CIA to do the break-in of Daniel Ellsberg's office. And the reason they were doing that, they wanted to find some damaging material they could use to stop his publication of the Pentagon Papers. That was all about. And, you know, they broke into the Watergate Hotel offices of the DNC. And they were going to deny the whole thing. They did deny the whole thing. And then it all came out, John Dean and the whole business. But the anger that the hardcore radical Republicans felt just never went away. And they hung on to it for years and years and years. They thought that that was, just a little minor infraction that Nixon did. Just a little minor infraction. The guy was trashing the Constitution, but it was okay. And then Ronnie Reagan came along. And the right-wing radicals certainly flourished during his time. I don't have to tell you that. They absolutely flourished. That's probably when the modern-day radical Republicans really got a good foothold. And along comes Bill Clinton. He was the answer to their prayers. You know, they'd been, the radicals up until Reagan had been kept out of power for a long, long time. And they were going along really well. And then Daddy Bush came in. He was neither here nor there as far as being a radical Republican. And they were all set to keep the stage all to themselves, and along comes Bill Clinton. Really, what it turned out for them, it turned out to be manna from heaven. Oh, yes, he did keep them from keeping the controls for a while, but Bill Clinton was a gift to the Republicans, and you know why. This destruction of the Clinton presidency wasn't any improv affair. They had planned it for a long, long time, that whoever was in there, the Heritage Foundation and the American Enterprise Institute, they'd been having their meetings for decades on how they were going to take over again. And along comes Bill Clinton, and bang, zoom, in they go, and they take over once again. You know, what they did to Bill Clinton, actually, they couldn't have asked for a better cooperation than they got from Bill Clinton over this whole thing. He walked right into their trap. And of course, they had the help of the right-wing media at that time. They had Rush Limbaugh coming along. He called himself an entertainer. What he really was a propagandist, a fascist. And vilified everybody, liberals in particular. We're the worst people to ever walk the earth, we liberals. And so Bill Clinton comes along, and Rush Limbaugh is on the stage, and he devised the tactics used to smear the left. He had no... he didn't respect facts. Rush Limbaugh and facts, putting those two together just doesn't fit. And it was, it turned it into a powerful strategy. Lie early, lie often, don't ever apologize for anything, don't ever retract anything, repeat every little lie that you want to use as propaganda, repeat it over and over and over, and tie it all into Bill Clinton. And that's exactly what they did. And Limbaugh was brilliant at it. The think tanks were just astounded at how good he was. They kept the Democrats off balance all the time, always on the defensive. One accusation after another, even of imaginary crimes, all they had to do is mention them. But once mentioned, why, they became fact. And Limbaugh didn't stop there. He started telling these stories in a way that putting Bill Clinton at the epicenter of every bad thing that ever happened in this country. And he got away with it. And it was their perfect plan. It was their perfect storm. Here they had a guy that, you know what Bill Clinton did. and Monica, and he just walked right into their spider web and has enabled them to become very, very powerful again. And they are literally fighting for their political lives right now. You are going to see the dirtiest, most vicious political campaign in our nation's history coming up, and there have been some lulus over the years. But this one's going to set all the records. It's going to set all the money for the records. It's going to set all the money for dirt, or set the record for dirt, for lies, deception. It's going to be like nothing you've ever seen before, because these people are desperate. They're desperate to have the White House back, to keep the White House, actually, right now. And they're desperate to have the House and Senate back. Now, they know they're not going to get the House and Senate back this time, but they know that they can continue frustrating the Democratic House and Democratic Senate majorities if they have somebody sitting in the Oval Office. They know they'll continue this filibuster threat, and they know they can continue requiring 60 votes in the Senate. And they know they'll continue having the blue dog Democrats on their side many times in the House. So it all comes down to this, keeping the White House. They must keep the White House, and believe me, they're willing to do anything, anything to keep it. Do keep that in mind when you're looking through this Democratic primary and you want to vilify one of the candidates. If you think, well, I'm going to run off and I'm going to vote third party, I'm going to, I don't like the candidate we end up. Do keep in mind who we're dealing with here. I don't like this lesser of two evils any more than you do. But as I've explained over and over again the last couple of days, I'd rather have somebody in the White House that's voted with me 70% of the time than somebody that's never voted with me. Do keep that in mind, and do keep the fact, keep in mind the fact that people like Krauthammer and Bill Kristol and the Wolfowitzes and the Richard Pearls and all those people are hanging, and Dick Cheney's are hanging around in the background wanting to hang on to control at any cost. At any cost. That's what it's come down to right now. Well, we're going to pause for a quick break, and what are we at here? We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
This is not America. Sha-la-la-la-la.
Little piece of you. The little beats in me. Well,
this is not a miracle.
For this is not
America.
Blossom fails to bloom the season. Promise not to.
is tapping on the cans. Sex, rock and roll in the shower. Tapping on the cans, singing to a soul. There's people out there turning music into gold. Are the greatest in the world. Each one a song in the making. They're singing right to me. I can hear the melody. Story is there for the taking. Diving over Canaan, singing to the soul. There's people out there turning music into gold.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. We've been talking about a little bit of everything this afternoon. We had John Nichols on a little earlier from The Nation's Magazine talking about the Scotty McClellan revelation. Is it really a revelation, or is it a way to sell books? Will they completely back off from it now? Will Patrick Fitzgerald hear this and go nuts and decide to do something? Or will he do like I think he probably will and say, I've done what I can. Speaking of Patrick Fitzgerald, our friend Phil up in Daytona just sent me this note. He's a good guy. Just got off the phone with Patrick Fitzgerald's assistant. They've been getting a lot of calls today about Scotty's book and asking Fitzgerald to reopen the Plamegate case. So far, they are instructed to give no comment, and they're not keeping track of the calls like congressional aides do. Here's the contact info for Mr. Fitzgerald. If you should like to call, and do remember, those of you on the East Coast, it's only 3:41 in Chicago right now, so I think... Keep that in mind. But if you want to call Patrick Fitzgerald's office and put a bug in his ear, 312-353-5300. 312-353-5300. Or if you want to shoot him an email, call would be best. But if you want to shoot him an email, patrick.fitzgerald. Patrick.fitzgerald, that's with a capital P and a capital F, by the way, at usdoj.gov. Patrick.fitzgerald at usdoj.gov with the capital P and F in his name. So you might want to contact Mr. Fitzgerald and let him know how you feel about this. I most certainly will. I feel strongly about this, and if McClellan is doing all this, if he and his publisher are doing this just to make a few million bucks on a book, then shame on them. It's hard for me to imagine, and I am aware that McClellan was very bitter when he left the White House, very bitter over being made to look the fool, and he was. They made the stooge out of him. There isn't any question about that. Ari Fleischer didn't leave on those terms. But when McClellan left, he looked like the fool, and they had made the fool of him. So is he trying to get back at these people a little bit? Who knows? Speaking of looking the fool, how many of you have seen this new TV ad with Huckabee and Chuck Norris? Chuck Norris. Here we have a man who wants to be the President of the United States, and he invited Chuck Norris to talk in his behalf. I'll play the audio of this commercial. I think it's astonishing. It's a couple of the dumbest things in it I think I've ever heard in a commercial.
An important policy message from Governor Mike Huckabee.
My plan to secure the border? Two words. Chuck Norris.
Mike Huckabee's a lifelong hunter who'll protect our Second Amendment rights.
There's no chin behind Chuck Norris's beard, only another fist.
Mike Huckabee wants to put the IRS out of business.
When Chuck Norris does a push-up, he isn't lifting himself up. He's pushing the earth down.
Mike's a principled, authentic conservative.
Chuck Norris doesn't endorse. He tells America how it's going to be. I'm Mike Huckabee, and I approve this message. So did Chuck.
Chuck Norris approved.
Chuck Norris approved. Now, man, that makes me want to jump on the bandwagon. Doesn't that do it for you? I'll have to admit, I've never watched a Chuck Norris program in my life, a movie, neither a TV appearance nor a movie. I've never seen any. I that kind of stuff's not for me. But he doesn't have a chin under that beard. He's got another fist. Huckabee, could you and your writers have thought of a more stupid comment than that? He's not doing push-ups. He's not raising him. He's pushing the world down. Man, I thought that was incredibly crazy. Speaking of crazy, you all know how I feel about Ron Paul, and I know it makes some of you mad when I say that, but I think Ron Paul's a first-class idiot. And he's trying to make himself out to be the Dennis Kucinich of the right, and believe me, when you do a little research on Ron Paul, you will find out that nothing could be further from the truth. But Ron Paul is reputed to be such a strict religious fundamentalist that he doesn't ever travel alone with a woman other than his wife. So at first, it might have come as a shock to see a Bunny Ranch brothel owner, Dennis Hoff, showing up for the campaign stop in Reno, Nevada yesterday, accompanied by working girls Brooke Taylor and Air Force Amy. Whatever that moniker, wherever that moniker came from, Air Force Amy, I can only assume that, well, anyway. According to Jeanette Dimon of RGJ.com, Paul recovered and gave such a convincing speech that Hoff, the owner of the Bunny Ranch Whorehouse, is now a convert. Makes a lot of sense, doesn't he, said Hoff. I'll do it today, he said. I'll get all the bunnies together, and we can raise him some money. I'll put up a collection box outside the door. They can drop in $1, $5 contributions. What a great way for the working girls to support Ron Paul. It's just the right thing to do. A strict Christian receiving contributions from prostitutes and johns collected at a brothel, can that possibly be morally acceptable? Campaign spokesman Jeff Greenspan seems to think so. And he's quoted as saying, on a personal basis, he doesn't condone those things. At the same time, from his campaign perspective, it's not the role of federal government, and it's not in the Constitution for federal government to regulate these things. The Nevada voters and legislature have decided it is legal activity in this state, so says Jeff Greenspan, and that's true, it is legal activity in this state. So there you have Ron Paul's ethical standards defined. Whoring is bad, but getting money from the earnings of whores is no problem. At least he's clear on the whole separation of church and state thing. I suppose that's good. But where are we at on here? Oh, And how did these whores and their pimp arrive at this campaign thingy by Ron Paul? They arrived by limo at the invitation of and accompanied by Tucker Carlson. That's right. What did Tucker have to say for himself? He said, Dennis Hoff is a good friend of mine, so when we got to Nevada, I decided to call him up and see if he wanted to come check this guy out, and apparently stopped by the whorehouse on the way. Mr. Carlson was not immediately available for comment. Well, that story is so fantastic, I have to wonder if it's true. But then a lot of things that I read about Ron Paul seems to be a little bit off the deep end. I do know that Ron Paul is an avowed racist. He's done what he can to hide that during this campaign, but he's not going to get away from it, not ever. All you have to go to do is look at some of the people that are backing him for the presidency, and you will see that. 866-546-5254. We'll be right back.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Now, he's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here, on the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play as time goes by.
I'm walking. Yes, indeed, and I'm talking.
Yes, indeed. We're all walking because walking is good medicine for your heart. The American Heart Association says for every hour of regular vigorous exercise we do, like very brisk walking, we could live 2 hours longer. So start walking. Imagine if we walk to the moon and back, we could live forever. Start walking for life. Take your mother. Take your brother.
I'm walking. Yes, indeed, and I'm talking about you.
Take your heart for a walk. Join the START movement at AmericanHeart.org/START for tools, tips, and more. Everybody now. I'm walking. Yes, indeed, and I'm a talking. You'll feel better, and you could live longer.
Looking forward to good food tomorrow. I hope all of you are with friends and family tomorrow, and enjoy Thanksgiving Day, and do remember what it's all about. I know times are tough here in this country. I know jobs are becoming scarce, and bank accounts are becoming empty, and people are losing homes, and a whole variety of problems that we've talked about on this program, but all of us still have some things to be thankful for, and I do hope you'll all take time to remember that tomorrow when you're with friends and family, if you're having a big Thanksgiving meal or just something modest. And I want to send along my very best wishes to all of you that you have a very good Thanksgiving Day, and hopefully some of you will be able to enjoy the entire weekend, have a holiday weekend. Black Friday. Oh, my. How many of you will be out there at the crack of dawn shopping on Friday morning? Never did understand that. I really never did understand that. I guess there's some bargains available or something, and the first one there. But we all see that every year. The reporters all rush to the malls and show us. Oh my God! Look at the people stampeding and the gals running over each other to save $3 on this toy or whatever. Don't do it. Stay home. wait a couple weeks. Go out and get what you get for going to buy for the holiday season. For if it's Christmas you're celebrating, whatever it is you're celebrating, just hang on. Be cool. Don't spend a lot of money this year. Don't overdo it. Don't spend a lot every year and overdo it any year. And John Fox just said, boycott Black Friday. Stay home and watch football. That sounds like a good idea, but unfortunately I won't be able to do that, but I won't be out shopping. So there'll be a mob, and you can bet all the malls will have extra traffic directors out shuttling people in and out of the malls, and they'll be busy places despite the tough economy there. And we'll start hearing, Friday evening? Oh, the forecast is not good. The retailers say that they've, didn't have as good a day as we had last year and all that. We'll see. I didn't want to let this program go by today without mentioning the attitude of our, and I hate saying this, our idiot president. What a wonderful message he sent out to the rest of the world today. President, let me just give this off the newswire. President Bush yesterday offered his strongest support of embattled Pakistani President Musharraf, saying the general, quote, I'm quoting the President of the United States here, saying the general hasn't crossed the line and truly is somebody who believes in democracy, end quote. Bush spoke nearly 3 weeks after Musharraf declared emergency rule, sacked members of the Supreme Court, and began a roundup of journalists, lawyers, and human rights activists. Musharraf's government yesterday released about 3,000 political prisoners, although 2,000 remain in custody, according to their own interior ministry. The comments, delivered in an interview with ABC News anchor Charles Gibson, contrasted with previous administration statements, including by Bush himself, expressing grave concern over Musharraf's actions. In his first public comments on the crisis 2 weeks ago, Bush said his aides bluntly warned Musharraf that his emergency measures would undermine democracy. Isn't it wonderful that our president, one Junior Bush, has decided that the most democratic thing possible is a military takeover? Because that is what he's doing. He's lauding Musharraf for getting rid of his Supreme Court, rounding up the journalists and human rights activists and all that. What wonderful logic that is. Arresting your opponents, including the Supreme Court justices, suspending the Constitution, and declaring martial law is not crossing the line. And those are the actions of someone who believes in democracy. If those are the thoughts of the President of the United States, what do you think he thinks of our own Constitution? What do you think his idea of our own democracy are? Does he think they're the same as what he just complimented Musharraf for? I think he does. I don't think Junior Bush has a true idea of what a true democracy is. I believe, to the depths of my soul, that if it became necessary, he would do the same thing as Musharraf did. I believe that if he had a chance to sack the Supreme Court, if they were going to rule against him, I believe he would do it and find a way to justify it. That's the contempt I have for this administration. Because of the contempt that they have shown almost every single day for the American people. I think this revelation by Scotty McClellan has probably relit the candle on this whole business about the war and how it got started and the lies that they used to get it started and the cover-up and the Valerie Plame incident and Ambassador Joe Wilson. I believe it's probably opened up that can of worms again. And I hope it has done so in a manner in which the American people can look at this whole thing and say, you know, this is wrong. This is not the way I want my government to act. These are not the actions of the chief of staff, the vice president, the President of the United States, the Press Secretary. These are not the actions of people running my government that I want to have. These are not the actions of people that I've entrusted my vote with. These are not the actions I want them to have. So if there's a silver lining in all this thing with Scotty McClellan, I hope it will serve to open this whole thing up again. Possibly bring Prosecutor Fitzgerald back into it again. And show the American people that we don't have to settle for this. We don't have to be under the thumb of an administration that has contempt for the people, that has contempt for the law and for the Constitution of the United States, and believes that they can do anything they want to. That all they have to do is commit a crime and pardon whoever did it and provide them with money and jobs the rest of their lives and everything will be fine. We don't have to settle for that. We are better than that. The people of this country are better than that. And so I do hope that over this holiday weekend that won't all just die out. I do hope that it'll stay on the front burner and people will continue to look at it and continue to push their congresspeople to investigate this matter and to bring pressure to bear on John Conyers. I hope that's what will happen. And keep that in mind. I know we'll all be discussing this over the Thanksgiving table, whether it be with our Democratic friends or, who knows, even some Republicans, not at my table. Anyway, I do wish the very best of Thanksgiving days for all of you tomorrow. I hope you can enjoy the day and enjoy it in peace and love with your family. Thanks so much for joining us today here on The Guy James Show. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network, Billy Shears, music director. And never forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later, gang.